I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is Monday, April 1st, at 10:22 p.m. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staub, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Foster, Representative Edgman, and we also have, and myself, Representative Johnson, and we have Representative Ortiz online. Representative Ortiz, are you there?
I am, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you.
All right. And Representative Plum. We are being assisted today by Emily Mesh, and our committee secretary is Bree Wiley. Today, we continue with the operating budget amendments. Last Thursday, the committee left off at on amendment number 7 after adopting a conceptual amendment number 1, and we're now back to the underlying amendment as amended. One moment. Yes, Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, I have learned how simple this all is, and I can explain it to refresh the memories if the chair wishes.
Explain
the amendment and the amendment to the amendment.
Go ahead.
So it sounded complex, but it's really not. Apparently, for many years, more than a decade, in fact, the state has contributed to the university $400,000 for purposes of military members' tuition assistance. Very straightforward. And those dollars come through university classes. So that's part one. And what the governor wished in FY25 was to subtract 200 of that $400,000 from the university's budget to essentially scholarship these military service members' courses, and to move 200,000 that was decremented to DMVA. So you'd stay at 400,000. What the university subcommittee did is said, we're not doing that. We're going to leave 400,000 in with the university. I did attend those meetings, but I don't recall great detail about that. And then, as Co-Chair Foster noted, the DMVA subcommittee added $200,000. So the effect of the amendment is to largely pay for the autism amendment, the underlying amendment, with general fund dollars that otherwise would have gone to DMVA. So if the amendment is adopted, it's sort of status quo ante, which is status quo, as to the $400,000 to the university and the funding mostly of the Autism General Fund program or increment.
All right. Thank you for bringing us back up to speed on amendment number 7. Any other discussion on amendment number 7? Seeing none, I'm not sure, but I don't... sure exactly what objection we had, but if there's any additional objection, if there's not, you are ready to vote. Or if there's no objection, we will motion the amendment passed without objection. That brings us to amendment number 18. We will start in the numbers packet on amendment number 18.
I move amendment number 18.
Jep.
Can I go ahead and speak?
All right. Representative Plum, would you go ahead and introduce amendment number 18?
All right. So this amendment is to hopefully provide some of this headroom that everybody's looking for. It's information that Ledge Finance has given us. The data that shows this data shows the budgeted PCNs that are vacant. The data shows that we have over $200 million of budgeted vacancies after accounting for the vacancy factor. That number is in to the right, not it's second column to the right. The UGF cost of those vacancies is $89 million. That's in column four, a little over $89 million. So this amendment reduces the agency budgets by half of the UGF cost. So we got the total amount of vacancies, and then we focused on UGF, and then we halved the UGF. It's an unallocated cut. The departments can choose where they want to make that cut, but there's a lot of money sitting out there in vacancies, and I think we all know that. Part of the issue for me, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this forward is that it's difficult. This is really helping things become more transparent. So everybody says, well, they're using that for overtime costs. But when I dig into budgets, it's very difficult as a legislator to understand what's actually overtime, what's actually being used with all the vacancy money. And so this is an attempt to make it more transparent, to give us a little headroom. We just passed a $40 million broadband bill. So it would help the departments zero in on exactly what they need, so we know exactly how much overtime is happening. And if it's not overtime, again, it will. If they have to come back and say, well, we need this, it puts us on a path for more transparency. So the numbers were analyzed and put together by Ledge Finance, by Mr. Painter. So if you guys have detailed questions, I would direct those to Mr. Painter.
All right, very good. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. A question. Does this include seasonal positions?
Well, to my knowledge, it doesn't, but I would like to have Mr. Painter come up and confirm that.
All right. We do have Alexi Painter in the room. If you would come forward, and if there's any additional questions, or Representative Plum has some specifics that she would like you to go over, if you would, that would be helpful.
Thank you. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. To the question from Representative Cronk, it does not include seasonal positions. These are only permanent full-time positions.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the Chair to Director Painter. So I just have a couple of questions here. So number one, maybe you could articulate for us in the committee. So typically, when you have these unfilled positions, my thought is you either lapse money back to the CBR ultimately, or the waterfall ultimately, or this unspent personal services line goes to cover things like overtime within the department. Can you speak to that really quickly?
Through the Chair, Representative Staff, you're correct. So depending on the agency, it'll be kind of a different story. Department of Corrections, typically vacant positions result in them having to fill with overtime that's at time and a half or two times the regular cost. So in that department, for example, in FY24, they have their actual projected expenditures on the personal services line are $15 million more than they're budgeted because of that overtime. So while there's savings from the positions being vacant, they have to make it up at a higher cost in those cases. In other agencies, or sticking with corrections because I'm the corrections analyst, they have vacant food services positions and make those up with a contracting out food services in some institutions, again, at a higher cost than if the employees were there. There are other agencies where, you know, they tend to just have a lower service level if they have vacant positions, so that money does lapse to the CBR. And we've seen the last few years some significant amounts lapsing into the CBR from vacant positions.
And a quick follow-up, Madam Co-Chair. So second question I have is I do see, looks like $4 million in this unallocated to the Department of Health. So of all these unallocated reductions regarding personnel services lines, how much federal match money is associated with any of these positions? Because I know that the Department of Health, all of them are probably so.
Through the Chair, Representative Staff, I don't have that on me. I think if I looked at the spreadsheet again, I could separate out the fund codes, but I think this is aggregating all UGF.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Galvin, followed by Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Mr. Painter, are you familiar with how many of these vacant positions are perhaps waiting on reclassification so that they can be hired?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I'm not sure. I don't have a number for that, but I would say that they're kind of, the administration is constantly doing classification studies. We've seen a couple in the supplemental budget, for example, where they've done reclassifications to raise the range of certain positions. For example, into the child support division, they raised those by two ranges. There's some forensic positions in the Department of Public Safety where they went up by three ranges. And so in those cases, I know for child support, they had active recruitments going before the reclassification. They had a lot more applicants after the reclassification. So they may be in active recruitment in some of these, but I couldn't give you a number of how many are in active recruitment or how many are being reclassified.
Follow up, if I may. So we don't know how many of these positions are vacant because we aren't competitive. Is that right? You're saying you're not sure how many?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes. I can't speak to how many are. I can't speak to why they're vacant, I suppose.
Okay. One last follow-up. To your knowledge, has there been any discussions among, particularly I'm looking at the governor's line here, about to lose $2.1 million, any discussions about what this would mean if we were to have these positions cut? Will Alaskans see fewer services?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I think it would depend program by program. And these are, the way the amendment is structured is an unallocated reduction, so the agency or the executive branch would choose what would get cut. So I can't speak to what they would choose to reduce, whether it would be positions or programs. I can't speak to what they would do.
One last.
I'd like, that.
Okay.
We need to move on, but Representative Josephson?
Yes, through the chair. The Mr. Painter, $4 million Department of Health, in some respects, one could look through the lens of the total budget and say this is a smidgen. But given all the variabilities in healthcare needs, they can change month to month. Do you have any sense of what impact that might cost the department?
Through the chair, Representative Justin, I think it would depend on how they chose to spread the unallocated reduction. If they spread it entirely to Medicaid, they could just ask for a supplemental for that amount, because that's a fixed amount. They put it in public assistance and stopped processing applications, it'd have a much higher impact. So it would really depend on what they would choose to do with that.
And if I might, I just want to make note, we have been joined by Representative Rauscher. Representative Josephson.
Yes, and a follow-up. As to the Department of Laws cuts and Department of Public Safety, without their officers sitting here and answering questions, we just can't know what they would cut, right? We don't know whether this means, for example, the governor wants to hire more prosecutors to handle sexual assault cases in the FY25 budget. It's in the range of $2 million. And he could just decide or ask his attorney general to decide, well, we just won't hire those folks. That's one option. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Justin, yes. By doing an unallocated reduction, you're essentially telling them, find what reduction you would like to make. It's giving them that decision in the executive branch.
And I guess...
one more, and then we'll move on to Representative Hannah.
By all indications, because money's lapsed, there's nothing fraudulent going on. The money stays with the state. It just doesn't go into CBR and earn a few percent interest or something. It remains. Tell me what happens to these lapsed funds.
Through the chair, Representative Justin, so any funds lapsed first go to potentially, there's sort of a few buckets that they fill in the budget of where unspent personal services money goes, including the catastrophe reserve account, getting that back to $50 million if there were draws, the filling the group health life safety account, which is backstops the health insurance for the state. So there, and then there's a rate smoothing appropriation from the governor's office for if rates are insufficient. After all those kind of buckets are filled, then it goes to the CBR. And so any lapsing money at the end of the year would just be going to the CBR after those, I think, three or four, I may be missing one, items are filled.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Hanner.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Painter, can you tell us which departments lapsed money? And I'm going to assume it was probably FY23 that we have the last results. Maybe it's 22. You've already mentioned that corrections did not. And that, so out of their personal services, which agencies lapsed money?
Through the chair, Representative Hinn, I don't have that report in front of me. I could provide it to the committee, but I don't have it in front of me.
Thank you. I have a question for Representative Klom. I thought I just wanted to elaborate a little bit. The intention is to just make sure that people know where monies are being spent. I mean, if you would just kind of elaborate for me what you were thinking on about that.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Chair. So when I've done the subcommittees the last 2 years, this year and last year, I found it difficult to really know where the money was being spent because there's a lot of money floating around in the departments and they're using it where they need to. But there's no, like, I can't see an overtime line that tells me this is how much overtime is being spent. So the intention of this amendment, although there's a potential of saving $44 million for the things that are in these 99 amendments that we're voting on, but more importantly is just having more transparency in the budget. That's what I really am trying to get to. These are, and Mr. Painter can correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding are these are vacancies from 2013 to 2022. They are long-standing vacancies. And if there was reduction of services, that would have already happened because those vacancies are empty. I'm not cutting a program. I'm not cutting anybody that's already in a job. These are positions that are being used, in my opinion, to make it very hard for me to see what is actually being needed by each department. So whether it lapses into another fund, whether they use it, my intention more was more for budget transparency and to try to curb this habit that we have of just letting them have these huge slush funds. I wanted to also just point out, like, so for those years, the total is over $200 million. I narrowed it way down. I'm not taking all their vacancies. We focused on UGF and half of UGF. We intentionally made it unallocated. We could have listed the PCNs we wanted them to eliminate, but I wanted the departments to have a little bit of freedom to figure out where they wanted to make those cuts. And so that's why it's unallocated. But it's a lot of it is just budget transparency.
So did I just heard you say they're all UGF. Those aren't federal. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Representative Regman.
I'm going to oppose this amendment because I think, although it offers what appears to be a simple solution, the underlying ramifications are highly complicated, and I'm really hesitant to, as the appropriators, give money to the departments to make the decisions when, in fact, already cut in that regard, too, because we're, in essence, in some degree, handing over our appropriation authority to some degree to the agencies. I'm also, as the subcommittee chair for Commerce and Corrections, $8.3 million for corrections. I don't know what that means, where this goes. I don't honestly see this going through the entire process. I see it creating a lot more work for the conference committee. If we truly were to take this up in a substantial way, which, you know, I would support. This has been a great discussion prior to this, trying to put it into the budget. The discussion about federal matching funds, I think, is very real. It could endanger the ability to leverage other funds in the budget. So for that reason, I don't think I'm going to support this.
Thank you. Anyone else want to speak to amendment number 18? All right, Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just want to thank Representative Cologne for bringing this forward. One of the biggest things we hear from constituents is transparency on spending in government. And I think when you have PCNs from 2013 to 2022 that haven't been hired, obviously there's a lot of money being left out there. And if we're not going to do it now, then when are we ever going to do this? We just continue to, we're not going to have this conversation. So if we don't do it now, when are we going to actually have this conversation? So I think this is a good amendment to have in here. And it wasn't like taking everything out. It's kind of a, you know, real rational approach to it. So I am going to support this. Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Hannon, have you spoken?
I asked questions, but I haven't spoken about the amendment.
Well, I will let you have, I will let you have another round. But try to make it brief.
Thank you.
We got like 80 some more minutes.
So, Madam Chair, of the subcommittees that I served on, the issues over vacancies are asked repeatedly. I've served on the corrections and public safety, commerce, and administration. Three of those are budgets where I don't feel like they could absorb this cost, corrections being one of them, that it would just create an internal nightmare. If I were hearing each of the subcommittee chairs say, I'm advocating for a cut in their general vacancy because in our subcommittee work we found that to be an issue, I perhaps could get on board with it. But with both public safety, corrections, and commerce being in there, those are departments where I do not see, and I know that we grilled them repeatedly about vacancy rates, that they can absorb them without creating a lot more administrative burden. And I, so for the budgets I'm most familiar with, I can't support it. And I don't know if we're interested in parceling this out to some departments but not others. With all of them in there collectively, I can't support the amendment. And I don't know if other subcommittee chairs could turn to their departments and say absolutely a department could absorb this cost and it wouldn't create chaos. I know that at Commerce, one of their vacancies is in both business licensing and license renewal. And I hear a lot from constituents, we want those positions filled and people paying overtime to fill them to get those, keep people at work. So as the amendment is currently structured, I can't support it.
All right, thank you.
Chair, could I do a wrap up?
Well, yes, in a moment. I wanted to just say, I just want to say one more thing. I do think that, I do appreciate the transparency piece. The other thing that's just obvious is that the vacancy rate is ongoing. You have an ongoing issue for years and years and years so I feel like the legislature just has to keep their eye on it all the time. It's just one of those things we always have to keep our eye on. We always have to be talking about because it's one of those things that if it's not being paid attention to, it's easy to let it get away. So I appreciate amendment being brought forward and that I wanted to make sure that was clear. Thank you. And Representative Cologne, go ahead and wrap up.
So to wrap up, I just wanted to mention, too, I have talked with the OMB director, and she has committed to not creating any more PCNs. She is working with her departments to reclass the PCNs if they need a position. I just want to reiterate, this goes up to 2022. It does not affect any vacancies in the last 3 years. They still have an opportunity to reclass positions if they need to, and this is only 40. This is half of the UGF vacancies. Just want to be that clear. And I think it's telling that it seems like it's very easy to dig into the permanent fund to pay for more government services, but when we try to hold the departments accountable and cut from them, then we can't do it.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Objection has been maintained. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Stapp.
Pass.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Cologne.
Yes.
Representative Cronk.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
Pass.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Josephson.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
5 yay, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5 yays and 6 nays, amendment number 18 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 19. Representative Josephson.
I'm going to withdraw and not offer at all amendment 19.
All right, amendment number 19 has been withdrawn. Brings us to amendment number 20. Representative Hannon.
Thank you. I move amendment number 20.
Yep. There's been an objection. Representative Hannon, would you like to speak to your amendment?
This amendment provides $1.2 million in funding for the public broadcasting radio system in the least populated areas of the state. Public radio stations represent 11 out of the state's emergency alert systems plan's 22 alert systems for local primary stations. So they are the primary source of emergency alert system in much of the state. All 11 of these are rural radio stations. This amendment recognizes that while we may not be able to restore public broadcasting funding in all areas of the state, we need to at least ensure that residents in the most remote areas have access to our emergency alert system. I would urge your support for this amendment.
All right. Anyone else? Representative Galvin.
Thanks. Just a quick comment. Thank you, Chair Johnson. I'm supportive of this bill, mainly because of the very convincing advocacy from the Alaska Regional Coalition, which is inclusive of Tanana Chiefs Council, Manilik, Kwarik, Chugachmut, Inupiat Community of Arctic Slope, Central Council of Tlingit Haida, and that's 70,000 Alaskans, and I feel that they need to have access to, especially to emergency information. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative
Madam Bell. Co-Chair, I would like to have the opportunity to get in the queue, please.
All right. Go ahead, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I like to speak in favor of this particular amendment, and I ask the members of the committee to recall the critical role that public radio played in relationship to the Wrangell landslide disaster that took place several months ago now. If you recall, after that landslide, it was shared by the mayor of Wrangell to the governor, first of all, and thanks to the governor for showing up and getting everything on board from the state department to help out with that disaster. But also, there was testimony from a variety of people that talked about the importance that the local public radio station in Wrangell played in providing information to people who were literally cut off from information after that landslide. That was the way that people in Wrangell knew what was going on. Part of the community was cut off. They couldn't get to the town other than by boat. They only had the radio to find out what was happening. And that was a very clear example about the critical role that public radio plays in emergency broadcasting or in providing emergency information, particularly to rural communities like Wrangell. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, just a quick question. So this is from the administration. How much is in the budget right now for the, how much did they ask for, I guess is one question, and what will this additional money be used for in light of whatever is in that line item already?
All right. Thank you. We'll get the questions answered and wrap up. Anyone else like to speak to, actually, I want to make sure that we have anything else you would like to speak to on this amendment, Representative Tomaszewski?
No, I'm good.
Okay, very good. Representative Edgman?
Yeah, tough amendment because, you know, we've seen the governor veto virtually every radio broadcasting dollar that we've added, unfortunately. But, you know, we put an additional $1 million in the budget last year, and that got vetoed, if I recall correctly. The $1.2 million, and I can speak from experience, I've got a number of these rural stations in my district, my hometown of Dillingham. They are limping along with a manager and one reporter. That's it. Nobody even answered the phones. This 1.2 is not enough. You know, I could argue that easily, and I won't take the time. But I'm just sitting here conflicted because if it's going to get vetoed in the end, what the heck, you know. So, over.
All right. Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection? No. Representative Staff, are you in? Would you like to speak?
No, I'm good. You can just call the roll, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay. You maintain your objection?
Madam Co-Chair, no.
Okay.
Renew my objection.
Thank you. Okay, we do have an objection. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
We have a wrap-up and answer
question. Oh, excuse me. What? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Wrap up.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to address Representative Tomaszewski's. The administration line item is zero. But why do I think we should put it in and risk a veto? The governor started his State of the State address this year talking about the increase in disasters in Alaska. And I think we will see more communities where in the face of a disaster, you need communication. And it used to be that the public radio network across the state was able to keep rural stations alive, sort of the gratis of having a statewide umbrella. It's been a number of years since the state has put any money into public radio. The urban stations can sort of fundraise and get underwriting and keep themselves afloat. Thus far, the rural radio stations have been able to piece it together with duct tape and a wire, but they're not going to be able to, and it's going to come at a time where we see the intersection of emergency broadcasts not being able to be transmitted and those stations not being there. So I think it is worth the risk to put it in the budget. This money is focused solely on the 11 remote communities with small populations that really don't have other viable options. There's not commercial radio operating in those areas, and I think it's an important effort to make. I'd urge your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hannon. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Cologne.
No.
Representative Cronk.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
No.
7 yay, 4 nay.
By a vote of 7 yays and 4 nays, amendment number 20 has been adopted. It brings us to amendment number 22, Representative Joseph, amendment number 21.
I move amendment 21.
Yeah.
All right, we have an objection. Representative Josephson?
Yes. Committee, this amendment came to me via two advocates for it who traveled to Juneau. They were in town for a number of days, and they wanted the legislature to launch a comprehensive study to see whether an Alaska film initiative could be recommenced. We used to have a robust film program, and they made arguments that it would help boost the economy, create jobs, and put the state on the global cinematic map. I received an email from a Stephen Cornfield who noted there were 192 supporters. He gave me the list of those names from around the state, and I can share them with you if you're inclined to see them. This would be a feasibility study. with the prospects of someday again having a dedicated film office and a state-managed film website. We had a robust program in the aughts. It went into the early part of the last decade. It was reformed by Senator Costello to give it new, albeit truncated, life. And then it was done away with during the what I'll call the Alaska recession of the teens. And I ask for your support for the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Further discussion? Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I'm going to be not in favor of this amendment. I do like the concept of film industry feasibility study. I just think we probably need to have a way more in-depth conversation. I also don't know who the company is or what they would do with the feasibility study. I will say that, you know, one of the first jobs I had in the Army was I worked security on the movie set A Big Miracle. And the actors in that movie flew up their own personal catering company to feed their own staff on state taxpayer dimes. So I don't know if we really want to visit that type of subsidy again in that structure. So that's why I'm going to be a no.
All right. Thank you. Representative Kronk, you maintain your objection? Yeah. Or would you? You do. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Madam Secretary. Will you please call the roll?
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Colom.
No.
Representative Kronk.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
By a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 21 has not been adopted. And we have had a request by Representative Ortiz to allow him to present his amendment when he is here in person. So we're going to go ahead and roll amendment number 22 to the bottom of the stack, or to when Representative Ortiz is back. So that brings us to amendment number 23, which is offered by Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, I'm going to propose, first of all, based on Representative Ortiz's request as to amendment 22, I suspect strongly that he would have a similar request as to amendment 24, and I'm going to move that amendment 23 be taken up and rolled beyond just after amendment 24 at the appropriate time. So essentially all of the ASME amendments would be rolled to a later time.
Well, let's go ahead and just take up amendment number 23. Let's go ahead and just get it done.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Record. Representative Josephson, we're on amendment number 23. Would you choose not to offer this at this time?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right. We are going to move, we're going to roll amendment number 24 to the Representative Josephson, amendment number 25.
Thank you. I move amendment 25.
Yep.
We do have an objection. Representative Josephson, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes. In my district, and that's sort of irrelevant, but it focuses the mind, I guess, there is the former Solid Waste Services Administration building. It has been used as an emergency cold weather shelter. It's well publicized for those who read Anchorage News. The current operating cost of the shelter estimated at $3.94 million for the total cost between mid-October and 30 days from today. The municipality notes that that funding is covered. However, the shelter is also able to be used as a low-barrier shelter that could be used this coming summer. And the cost for doing so would amount to another $3.6 million. The Anchorage Assembly and Mayor have jointly requested, I have a copy of the Anchorage Resolution 23-37, as well as the Anchorage Legislative Program, that a $4 million match from the legislature be funded to keep the shelter running year-round. I think that one of the things supporters, first of all, this is the top administration request, I believe, from Mayor Bronson. And let me make sure that that's a credible comment. And I think that he has four requests. A number of them are capital. And I think this is his main operating request. I'm confident that it is. And folks working on this, like the Anchorage Coalition and Homelessness and the administration, the Bronson administration, highlight the fact that the homelessness crisis, which has impacted all of the Western states and much of the United States and Anchorage in a profound way, is a shared problem in that many, many people are homeless and not directly from Anchorage. And we welcome all our guests, but nonetheless, it's a shared problem. And indeed, this was in no particular numerical order. This was the third of four requests, or third of three requests, in Mayor Bronson's legislative priorities. The first noted is the Dong Yung port modernization. The second is energy reliability and affordability. That's the Cook Inlet crisis. And the third is this funding. And I ask for your help in this important, important amendment. Thank you.
Is there an objection? All right. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I speak in support of Amendment 25, and I would like to remind all of us here that, and perhaps you've already seen the headlines, that very soon we'll see about 900 in all released from housing in Anchorage, 900 Alaskans. Of those Alaskans, we know that 60% are not from Anchorage. 40% are from Anchorage. So this is a statewide concern, of course. This ask is a relatively low dollar figure when we consider how it might perhaps help connect more Alaskans to services, as they'll have a place to go during the daytime and hopefully get through to the services needed and help them on their way to an independent life. I do appreciate hearing from Representative Josephson that this was the mayor's ask. I've also heard from all of the Anchorage Assembly members that this is a key priority as well. So I'm very concerned about what's going to happen this summer. I think it has a big impact on our travel industry as well when we do not have places for people to be. And this is a very economic solution for the moment. It's not a long-term one, but I sure hope that we will all support this amendment. Thank you.
Briefings. Next up, we have Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I don't support this amendment. Several reasons. So the main one is this language called low barrier shelter, right? So everyone I've asked about that, what that word means. Basically, they tell me that it's a place where homeless folks can go throughout the day and be able to use drugs and alcohol and have a safe place to do that. So I don't fundamentally believe that the state should be in the business of giving direct million-dollar grants to places that allow homeless folks to be able to use substance abuse materials. My sympathy to the homeless crisis in Anchorage. I'm going to be a no on the amendment. So.
Next up, we have Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. So I'll be supporting the amendment. Anchorage has been struggling with homelessness for a while, and I've always said it's a statewide issue. It's not an Anchorage problem. You can't say that Anchorage hasn't put skin in the game. We've put millions of dollars towards solving this issue. We've gotten very little state support. This is a very small amount in regards to what has been put into this problem. This just simply makes sure the shelter is year-round. And it on one side, it does affect tourism because we have a lot of problems downtown, and so it gives these people somewhere to be. But more importantly, just for their own shelter and their own safety. This is something that Anchorage has been dealing with. And again, I haven't seen a lot of state support around this. And because it's not only people from Anchorage that we're dealing with, I just urge my colleagues to support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Colom. Anyone else? Representative Josephson, would you like to wrap up?
Yes, I would. And just on one comment, and that is from Representative Stapp. My strong memory from hearing from Assembly Member Brawley, who is an expert in this area, as are some other Assembly members, is that low barrier does not mean that people are invited to bring their stash of drugs and alcohol into the shelter. What it means is that there is a welcome sign, is what it means. They're not going to be screened and given a UA and a drug test and checked with a field sobriety test. That is true. And that's where I think the term low barrier comes in. But I think there are rules of the facility, and I don't think it's accurate that it's a party house. That's not what this is.
All right, thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Kroc, you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Kroc.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Cologne.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
5 yay, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5 yays and 6 nays, amendment number 25 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 26, which is offered by Representative Ortiz, so we'll put that one. We will not have that offered at this time. We will go on to Representative Josephson, amendment number 27.
The legislature is going to be nimble. You have to pivot from one thing to another. I move amendment 27.
Objection.
There's been an objection. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes. Madam Chair, before I believe the 17th or 16th of January, I arrived early because I do that. There's so much to do here in town. And walking the hallway was the gentleman who is now the director of the Iditarod. And I think he was here to talk to people like me because we know the Iditarod is a long, long way from here. And what he noted was that we've seen this before and we've extended a helping hand to the Iditarod in the past. And he noted that because of criticism from groups like People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, that major sponsors like Alaska Airlines, ExxonMobil, Coca-Cola, and Wells Fargo have ended race sponsorship of the Iditarod. And so he has asked for state support of the Iditarod. I'm not an expert on the sort of benefits that come to us via the Iditarod in an economic sense. They must be considerable in the villages along the routes, the two routes. But they're also considerable in the Mat-Su and Anchorage. And we also get, I think, some free media, for sure. I know we do. And that benefits, that must benefit tourism. I'm sure it's incalculable. But it's something that we take pride in. And I think that this is a worthy cause. And so this would be a grant in need of aid kind of thing through DCCED. And I ask for your support.
Anyone else who would like to speak to amendment number 27? Seeing no comments, Representative Kronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Colom.
No.
Representative Kronk.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
5 yea, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, amendment number 27 has not been adopted. Brief at ease. Finance back on the record. Representative Josephson.
Yeah.
We have an objection, Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, I'd ask for a little bit of leeway to explain this amendment. There's a lot to consider here, and I think all of it good. The amendment is for a grant to Volunteers of America Alaska for direct services for an expansion of their continuum of care. It's a complicated item in some respects. We had a very productive lunch and learn on the 22nd of February regarding this issue and also the other work of Volunteers of America. They have, first of all, the term volunteers is a great term, but it's a misnomer in that there are certainly volunteers, but it is an organization that works with youth primarily, including youth who have dual diagnosis, mental health, and substance abuse problems. They have the only, as I understand it, non-tribal residential care facility, 24-hour facility, in the state of Alaska. It's called ARCH, and it's in the Eagle River Highland Road area. I've toured it a couple times. What they're asking for First of all, let me tell you just a couple things that I revisited this morning from that lunch and learn. They, if I've got this right, there were 1,900 children in Alaska admitted somewhere with behavioral health diagnoses. Only 30-40% of those kids or adolescents had a continued care plan when they left. And so what this is in part an expansion of Volunteers of America's footprint, but also gives them more capacity to treat these young people. I think importantly, and this is a very important economic argument, the director of VOA, Julia Louie, notes that Medicaid paid out $83 million for children to leave Alaska to go to psychiatric hospitals in a single year, and only $32 million was spent on community-based services. If I was given just one set of statistics from her lunch and learn, that might be the one. But there are others. She noted that the 1,600 children that were taken in by OCS for childhood abuse, 53% received behavioral health services. But as I noted, a lot of them, they're sort of the dead end because of a lack of continuum of care. 28% of those children spoke to suicidal ideation. So this is designed to build out that continuum of care. And I'd like to be a little more specific about what that entails. VOA is seeking the state's investment in the amount of $1.1 million for 1 year at a time. It's 2 years of funding to support its transition into an integrated model of care. The transition is in response to the ongoing youth mental health crisis in Alaska, which was worsened by COVID, and the evolving needs of youth and their families. It will position VOA to open Alaska's first detox facility for youth. In the last 3 years, VOA Alaska has expanded its capacity for community-based services by 300%, impacting 1,124 youth, young adults, and families in fiscal year 2023. Through this strategic investment in psychiatric and medical services, so they would actually have a psychiatrist on staff, facility enhancements, and software updates, VOA will be poised to continue growing and meeting the needs of young Alaskans and their families. With a fully integrated model of care, VOA will be able to offer a robust continuum of care for youth, spanning from the earliest levels of prevention and intervention to acute psychiatric needs for Alaska's youth. The investment is critical to maintain and enhance behavioral health services for youth in Alaska. And I could go on and on about this. I suspect strongly that advocates for this grant have met with you and your staff, staffs, I guess, at least once this session. And I urge you in the strongest possible terms to support the amendment, and I'll try to answer any questions that I can.
All right. Any further discussion? Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did not get to visit this particular facility, but I was asked several times, and I have met with the individuals who are leading the charge there. I appreciate that some of us think that we should not house people unless they've been through detox, and yet we don't have enough detox opportunities. And if I'm hearing correctly that this would be the first non-tribal detox for youth, I'm very much in support of this, and I urge my colleagues to also support it. Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So, to the maker of the amendment, so this is actually something that, you know, we have this wonderful lady in the crowd today, actually. So I actually support this. I'm not going to support this amendment currently, and there's a couple of reasons. So, I think that the money should actually be in the grants line in the amendment. You have $212,000, $500 in the services line, the personnel line. I'm not sure if that's exactly drafted accurately. The second aspect is I would like to see it accompany a similar $1.1 million reduction. I certainly have all those things available. I wasn't able to get them done before this Finance Committee meeting. So certainly support the concept, just not going to do it at the moment until I kind of figure those mechanizations out. So that's, but appreciate what Representative Galvin had to say. So
thank you, Representative Stem. Representative Clum.
A question for the sponsor of the amendment. Is this in the base or is this one time?
Through the chair, it's two times. It's 25 and 26.
All right. Anyone else? Representative Josephson, would you like to wrap this up?
Yes. You know, there's little doubt in my mind when we think about the juvenile justice dollars, and those are considerable. When we think about shipping students out of state, those are three times what we spend on in-state children with dual diagnosis. We know that VOA is the only organization in the state with a facility to offer youth substance abuse services. They provide a unique service. The state has invested in VOA before and doesn't regret it. We did that a couple of years ago with a school-based program. This is a different type of program. But you think about juvenile justice issues. You think about problems we've had with North Star. You think about the Department of Justice report, problems at OCS. This is, you know, as Ms. Louie says and said on February 22nd, these kids are in the fast-moving river, and VOA is designed to pull them out of that river. So this is a way to hopefully circumvent the spending of much more general fund than I'm asking for here. This is among the most important amendments I'm offering in this bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ruffies. back on the record. Representative Kronk, do you maintain your objection?
No, I removed my objection.
All right. We have further objection?
Object.
We do have an objection. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Cologne.
No.
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
8 yea, 3 nay.
By a vote of 8 yeas and 3 nays, amendment number 28 has passed, has been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 29, Representative Hannon.
I move amendment 29.
Check.
Would you like to introduce your amendment?
Amendment 29 defunds the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. Since 2014, we've spent approximately $180 million. We've appropriated $180 million to the Alaska LNG Project Fund. We have very little to show for that investment. AGDC has failed to attract a single investor over its entire existence. Many experts in the industry have said the project iterations of the years have not attracted participants because they simply do not pencil out. This also goes for AGDC's latest Hail Mary pitch for an in-state line that takes advantage of people's crisis thinking about the looming Rail Belt energy crisis. As a member of the other body said earlier this year, at some point we have to have a conversation about mothballing AGDC, and this is that conversation.
All right, thank you, Representative Hannon. Wow, Representative Galvin.
Madam Chair, I'd like to not vote on this. I need to recuse because I have family involvement through AGDC currently.
Object.
Any Representative Kronk, would you like to speak to this amendment?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, through the Chair. While there probably is some validity to a lot of the money that we spent to, and we haven't or spent and haven't seen a whole lot here. It's really hard to bail on this right now. It's easy for people that don't live in the interior or South Central to say, wow, this may never pan out. I'm going to not support this amendment just because some sort of gas line, if it could happen, which I would hope it happens a lot sooner than later, would be crucial for our state, especially the energy needs. But surely willing to have this conversation because I think we all need to sit down and say, is this really a fallacy or is this something that can come into play? And, you know, the rumors I've heard lately that it is something that has possibilities. So that's a big possibility for our state because we all know that we need this energy somehow, some way. So I'm going to oppose this amendment.
All right. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I think I would concur with those comments as well. There's, you know, this every year finds me more and more drifting towards wanting to take the funding out and just close the thing up. But the fact is, since 2014, you know, valuable permitting has taken place. There's a federal guarantee that has been acquired. And sure, the $150 million that we, you know, were told that the Goldman Sachs would go out and procure didn't happen last year. But at the same time, we know at some point all that stranded gas is going to find its way to market somewhere, somehow, sometime in the future. And I'm, again, conflicted on this, but I don't know that we should go to the point of just taking it all out and stopping it dead in its tracks at this point. But there are more and more arguments every year to do just exactly that. So thank you.
Representative Stapp.
thank you, Madam Chair. So I am not in favor of complete liquidation of AGDC at this time. I am very, very inclined to take a decrement out of the personnel services line, though, if the maker of the amendment is interested in that, just to send a message. One of my vivid memories of this body last year was two individuals from AGDC telling me, one said that they had the greatest economic project in the history of the North American continent. That clearly didn't pan out to be true. And the other individual, when asked if they would get the front-end engineering and design money, I asked them if they would do that with high confidence, and they said absolutely. And here we are in March, and I don't believe they secured that. So certainly I'm not going to defund AGDC. So going to be a no on this amendment, although if another one came up with a slight decrement in the personnel services line, I might support that. So that's what I have to say.
All right. Thank you, Representative Staff. Anyone else? Or are you finished, Representative Staff?
We have a brief that is, Madam Chair.
Hands back on the record. All right, so we're going to go ahead and finish up this amendment number 29, and then we'll take a 10-minute break, and then we'll be back.
Yep.
We'll come back to this. So,
Madam Chair,
Representative Stamp.
I'd like to move a conceptual amendment to Amendment 29. So what conceptual Amendment 1 would do would basically to rather than cut $6.1 million out of the AGDC budget, it would simply, in the way this works, it would have to restore $5.573.6 million back to ADDC's budget because of the way the maker drafted her amendment. But it does decrement the personnel services line from what's currently in the budget. And my explanation is what I basically said on the record. Look, I did not appreciate the two people from AGDC coming before this committee and what they said and the promises that they made. And I think that the best way to hold people accountable in life is to do a decrement in the personal services line. So that's right. The amendment I move.
Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record.
Yeah.
All right. We go ahead, Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So just to clarify, my conceptual amendment would basically restore all the amount of the cuts in the underlying amendment minus $598,588 in general funds. So overall, we would be maintaining the vast majority of the appropriation for AGDC minus $598,588.
Okay. Any additional questions? Comments? $598,588. All right. Very good. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to speak in favor of this amendment, and having the conversation on the record that our expectations for AGDC are higher than they've been delivering, and that our focus needs to be fixing the rail belt energy problem regardless of the status of an in-state gas line. We have got to focus and give some attention to that and not just continue to say that someday we will have the penultimate access to LNG. I knew that Amendment 29 would not be a very popular one, but again, having on the record that our expectations of what we're going to get for continuing to talk about rail belt energy needs are prioritized, and having two of the highest paid state employees pay a little more attention to the fact that we are continuing to use the term return on investment, and Alaskans need some return on the investment, and I support this decrement to the personnel services line 100% and hope you will too.
All right. Anyone else? Representative Galvin.
Again, I'd like to ask to be recused from this vote because of familial relations with the current work situation with AGDC.
Object.
There's been an objection. All right. Anyone else that would like to speak to amendment number, conceptual amendment number one to amendment number 29? All right. Do you maintain your objection? I'm trying to remember who made the objection.
I didn't have an objection to the conceptual amendment.
Okay. Well, we have a conceptual amendment with no objections.
Can I clarify something?
Well, first of all, let me just unwind this if we needed to have an objection to the conceptual amendment. Do we have an objection to the conceptual amendment?
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Very good. Thank you. All right, Representative Josephson.
Question for the maker through the chair. Your funding would continue to split the funding source general fund 50% AGDC LNG.
I don't know where they get their money.
50%.
Through the chair, Representative Joseph, that's correct, right?
Thank you. That's all I need.
All right. Representative Edgman, do you maintain your objection?
Madam Co-Chair, I remove my objection.
Okay. The objection has been removed. Any further objection? I am going to object. So, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Pass.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes.
Representative Colomb.
Yes.
Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
No.
10 yay, 1 nay.
So by a vote of 2 yays and 9 yays, conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 29 has been adopted. That brings us back to the underlying amendment as amended.
Chair, I think the vote was 10 yeas, 1 nay, not 9. Wait, 10. Yeah, you said 9.
Madam Secretary, will you please tell us the vote count, please?
10 yea, 1 nay.
Oh, okay. Not 10 yeas and 1 nay. Okay, by a vote of 10 yeas and 1 10 yeas and 1 nay. Amendment number, the conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 29 has been adopted. That brings us back to our underlying amendment number 29 as amended. So,
Madam Co-Chair, may I interject? I believe the conceptual amendment passed without objection, and underlying amendment has amended. Passed 10-1.
Very good. Okay. Yeah, the conceptual amendment passed without objection, and the underlying amendment has passed by 10 yeas and 1 nay. Thank you for keeping me on track there. All right, amendment number 29 has been completed. That brings us to amendment number 30. And what I would, if we could just take a super brief, we'll take a little brief at ease, but I would like to be back by 11:55. So, and then we'll go another half hour or so. Maybe an hour or so. House Finance at ease. To what we just passed.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want a quick clarification because the Representative Justice asked a question. I didn't give the proper answer. So I want to clarify that the intention of the amendment we just passed is an approximate $598,600 decrement to the personal services line in general funds. So the fund source for this decrement is UGF. I apologize, I responded incorrectly to Representative Justice's question about the split. With the adoption of the amendment, the fund source split for AGDC will be approximately $2,487,500 in UGF with fund source code of 1004 and $3,086,100 in AGDC interagency receipts with the fund source code of 1235. That's all I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We're on amendment number 30, which was also belongs to Representative Ortiz. So we'll go on to amendment number 31, which is offered by Representative Josephson.
I move in 31.
Object.
All right, we have an objection, Representative Josephson.
Yes, it's among the most self-explanatory amendments. It would cut the grant for hunting education in half. I don't know that we need a permanent grant for hunting education. That's why I offer the amendment.
Okay. Representative Cronk, would you like to speak to this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I oppose this amendment because hunting safety is mandatory in many units across Alaska, and getting this safety training and getting qualified with hunter ed can be a tough process, especially in rural Alaska. We're talking hunting, which is food security, which is part of our culture, our life out there. And I believe this is, it's grant funding. So this allows different groups to get out there, and whether it's, doing the hunter safety or archery, this is really good for kids. But more importantly, this is helps support our lifestyles that we live out in rural Alaska. And this, even for urban Alaska, there's lots of kids, there's lots of people that hunt, and there's lots of people that use it for food in their freezers. So I'm going to oppose this mainly because goes against the lifestyle that I live in. And we need this. I see the real need for like gun safety and stuff out there, because it's just an important thing to have out, especially in rural Alaska. And like I said, it's hard to get people out there. A lot of times you have to fly out to these schools, and having these grants available to get people out there to work with our kids. And every one of these programs I've ever seen in the school, it's the kids are really interactive and they're really learning a lot. So I just think the more we do, especially around the gun safety aspect, is really important. So I'm going to oppose this amendment.
Anyone else? I just want to make a statement. I oppose this amendment mostly because anything that helps people, children particularly, understand how guns work and how to respect them, as well as getting people away from their video games and out into nature, I will always be supportive of keeping that in place. So, Representative Kronk, you maintain your objection? All right, very good. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Pass.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Colomb.
No.
Representative Kronk.
No.
Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Hannon.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
1 yay, 10 nay.
By a vote of 1 yay and 10 nays, amendment number 31 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 32, offered by Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move amendment 32.
Yeah. There's been an objection.
Thank you. If I may speak to it?
Yes, please.
Thank you. This is an amendment that adds $500,000 to the grant program for parents as teachers. And I have a sheet in front of you that has been passed out that describes what parents as teachers does. The second page describes how it's seated in the Education Reads Act. And the impetus for this is that our children who are 5 years old walk into kindergarten, and approximately 30% of them are ready to learn and have the average vocabulary skills necessary and know how to string together words to make a sentence, etc. That means that 70% are not. And the reason is that a lot of learning happens at home. And we know that a lot of learning happens at home when parents, as first teachers, understand how to engage and interact with our youngest. This particular program was a program that is more than 30 years old out of the Midwest, and it's a very well-known program. It's comprehensive. It's done well here in Alaska. It's been here for decades as well. It's an evidence-based home visiting model used by parents as teachers affiliates. It provides services to families with the children from the prenatal period through kindergarten. It's a critical part of supporting early childhood education because it helps these parents to know how to be interactive to ensure that the skills that are necessary for the next step in learning are there. This delivers these services to children and their parents through a trained parent educators who visit homes and support and build relationships and this build on the strengths between the caregiver and or parent and the child while teaching about optimal early childhood development learning. And as any parent will tell you, a parent is constantly learning and growing in their knowledge of how to support their child as they develop. And parents as teachers helps that support. and helps to expand and expedite this process, providing needed and appreciated guidance and support during what could otherwise be a lonely period in a young parent's life. It's administered by the Section of Women's, Children's, and Family Health through a contract with DEED. And now is the good news I want to be sure and share. First of all, Parents as Teachers is currently all over the state. It's in Anchorage, Haines, Tuxic Bay, Kodiak, and in Juneau. There are wait lists throughout the state. They want to expand it. Rural CAP would like to bring in three more rural communities. And to make this a win-win-win amendment, I just got news today that there are $726,000 in federal matching grants, which will require $242,000 in non-federal match. So it's $1 for every $3 of federal match. And this that additional funding will support an additional 100 to 200 families across Alaska. So I think this is just such a wonderful opportunity for our youngest to be better prepared at kindergarten. And I hope that you will support this at-home visiting program that is already proven so that we can expand it and have more readiness at kindergarten. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. Is there anyone else who would like to speak for Representative Stapp?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. To Representative Galvin, so thank you for kind of identifying this. A couple of issues, let an amendment I viewed as poorly drafted go. So if this is going to go through the Department of Health, it should have federal receipt authority matched to that. I'm not sure if the department has that. I think they could probably get it.
I'm happy to speak to that.
I'm going to be a no for now, but I certainly would revisit it later after I have the opportunity to verify some things. So appreciate you offering it, though.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. To Representative Galvin, one question is, it looks like it's an increment. Is this going, Representative Galvin? Is this going into the base? Is this a one-time? Also, who are the people going in to coach parents? Are these state workers?
All right. Does that complete your comments? Okay. Anyone else? Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, through the Chair. How much funding does this program already have? On top of what I look like to me is another ask. Thank you.
And anything else you want to add to that? No questions. Anyone else that would like to speak to this? All right, Representative Galvin, and wrap up if you would and answer the questions that were before us.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Chair.
I don't want that job.
Never know. Firstly, to respond to Representative Staff's concerns about whether or not this is something that can go through the federal government or if it's somehow set up already. This is according to Trevor Storrs at Alaska Children's Trust from this morning. He said that current MIECHV funds are managed by the Department of Health, Women, Children's, and Family Health current funds do not require any matching funds, the current funds that are there. He says that he's sharing this information because it may help grow support if they understood the opportunity here for federal funds as a match. And again, this is the MIECHV is a federal initiative designed to support pregnant women and families, particularly those considered at risk, through voluntary home visiting programs, and that these programs provide valuable resources, guidance, and support. And this particular program has been one that has been approved. So I'll just leave that one at that. And currently, the amount of funds that are presently at Indeed is $474,700, is what I have to answer Representative Cronk's question. And then I think the other question maybe came from Representative Colomb. And this is I believe with the federal matching, it is a one, so this is grants, it's a grant program, and it's a one-time grant program we would be funding. And I think I answered all of those questions for now. I look forward to you considering this. Again, I think the biggest black hole that we have for our children is what we're doing from 0 to 5 to help them in their readiness. And moreover, helping young parents have the skills that they need to be that first teacher. And this is a proven program that does that. There are wait lists for that. And I would certainly hope that we can make sure that these dollars spent, and we know from 29 years of research that every dollar spent here in the 0 to 5 saves us $8 down the road. So the ROI is unquestionable. Thank you.
Thank you. Brief it is. On the record. Okay, we have some questions on the funding. So, Representative Galvin, would you like to have someone come forward, or would you like to explain that?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think I can clarify this, that the funds would be in the base. And if Mr. Alexi, if you'd mind coming up and explaining that, that would be helpful for me. I apologize.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Painter, if you would, come forward, and we just have a couple things we need to have clarified. Thank you. Thank you. And I don't know if you need to have the question redirected, or if you would just clarify the funding increment. Or
for the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So this amendment is for a permanent increment, not a... So it would be in the base. The federal funding is not part of this amendment, since I think that was just learned about after this was drafted.
All right, very good. Anyone else have any questions for Mr. Painter? Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
And if I may clarify one other point that was brought up, the funds, while they're in the base, they do go through a grant program. And so there are examples of the different grantees listed here. As I've mentioned, Kids Corp, Rural Cap, Kodiak area, and in the Southeast in Juneau, and I know Haines is one as well. Anyhow, they are not state employees. That was a good question. The state employees do administer the grants, though, and so they work together to make sure that the parents as teachers are meeting the guidelines and the money is dispersed accordingly.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Painter. Mr. Representative Cronk, you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Cronk?
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
By a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 32 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 33, Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move amendment 33.
Yep.
There's been an objection.
This may seem unnecessary, it may seem de minimis, it may seem a lot of things, but in order to fully match the funding, the state needs to contribute $5.2 million, and it's contributed $5 million. I would note that I'm told as recently as last week that Meadow Lakes in the Valley has a head start with 48 kids that will be closing at the end of May. They didn't say with this $200,000 that wouldn't happen, but they noted that. Someone told me that because I couldn't make that up. There are 51 Head Start seats also closing in Anchorage. And so this finishes the job done by smartly by the subcommittee. I ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Anyone like to speak to this?
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Benjamin.
Yeah, I just want to take this opportunity, number one, to thank the committee and yourself and others for the committee subcommittee chair for the $5 million that's in the budget before us. I think that's a big step forward. The smaller amount, $200,000, of course, is less material. The maker of the amendment just sort of as much verified that it's important on one hand, but it's immaterial relative to the $5 million. But I just wanted to take this minute or so to use my platform to advocate for the Head Start program, which has been the primary player in early learning in Alaska for many, many years, and now is seeing a steady erosion and perhaps an eventual demise, unfortunately, because we have not done our part to meet the federal match money, match rate at 20%. I think we've gotten up to 12% or thereabouts. The Head Start program is having difficulty in keeping up an environment where the READS Act is starting to compete. READS Act is not fully funded and all of our school districts and what have you. And so just a shout out to the Head Start program, and I'll make up my mind how I'm going to vote when the time comes.
All right. Thank you very much. I wanted to make note that Representative Klum, I believe in the subcommittee, there's $5 million was put into the budget, and that is still retained in the budget. So this is in addition to the $5 million that was already added. We did put in $5 million last year coming out of this committee, and it did not maintain all the way through. But I'm hoping that it does this time. It's a valuable program, and I'm not sure if adding more to it will help that, but I do have some concerns about that. Anyone else that would like to speak to amendment number 33? Seeing no one, Representative Cronk, is your objection maintained? All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Colomb.
Pass.
Representative Cronk. Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Colomb.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
8 yea, 3 nay.
By a vote of 8 yeas and 3 nays, amendment number 33 has been adopted. Amendment number 34, Representative Josephson.
I'm going to withdraw and not offer 34.
Amendment number 34 has been withdrawn. Brings us to amendment number 35, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move amendment 35.
Yep. We have an objection. Would you speak to your, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. This amendment will add $320,000 to UGF, and the purpose of this is to support Best Beginnings Imagination Library. This amendment will invest in early reading through Best Beginnings, Dolly Parton Imagination Library, many of us are already familiar with. It provides age-appropriate early literacy children's books and parent education weekly newsletters to help them know how to read to their child and talk to them to grow their vocabulary. The engagement activities are extremely important in our children's readiness for kindergarten. And this will allow more communities, more children, more families to access this highly successful early literacy program. The children's books arrive by mail each month to children from birth to five years old, serving 112 different Alaska communities. The program is supported statewide by Best Beginnings and as a public-private partnership. And Best Beginnings provides training and financial assistance to local organizations. Participation in the Imagination Library nearly doubled from 2010 to 2018. And in 2018, 24,586 children across the state received over 200,000 books. And this amendment supports the continuation and expansion of the program here in Alaska. And the only other comment I have is that the Imagination Library participation is now associated with some new data showing higher reading and math achievement in grade 3.
Representative Stout.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So a couple of things. First, I have a conflict because my kids get these books in the mail. So I should probably disclose that and be okay. Now for the awkward part, I don't support the amendment. So it only it's $320,000 in the base. I'm not aware of the resources of the program. I'm not entirely sure what an additional $320,000 would do if we were to do that, especially forever money in the base budget. Although I do appreciate Representative Galvin for offering it and demonstrating the how great a program it actually is. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Staff. Anyone else? All right. I wanted to clarify. I think that this is no matter how we vote on this amendment, the Dolly Parton Library nationwide still sends out the books to preschools. It's not going to change preschoolers. It's not going to change people receiving their books, what we do here. So unless there's something I don't know that's correct. Representative Galvin, do you want to wrap up? Oh, sorry, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair. I want to speak in favor of this amendment. Although the Imagination Library does it at a very low cost, it is not a free program. The grant funds that are available across the state through a variety of organizations to do it. So, for instance, here in Juneau, Bartlett Hospital enrolls any child born at Bartlett Hospital in the Best Beginnings through a grant that is locally received. It's not available statewide. This amendment would get it into more kids' hands. And what we do know, as Representative Stapp spoke to, the idea of putting literacy into the hands of children is the best way to move on reading as a life skill. And one of the things that kids really like, once they get a little older, of course, the toddler doesn't understand that, but a 3 or 4 year old who knows their name and knows that this book comes to them and that it's theirs, it gives them ownership and pride in the idea that this skill is theirs, this resource is theirs, and It has a huge return on investment. So as we want to talk about improving literacy across Alaska, helping people who are the least likely to have a lot of access get better access to literacy tools is beneficial and has a strong return on investment, and I'd urge your support of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hannah and Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for the people out there watching, anytime we're talking about adding it to the base, that means it's always going to be in the budget. And as we're doing these, our budget just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm not saying this is not a good program at all, but this, when it goes into the base, it doesn't go away. So some of these votes are very hard, but I just want people out there to realize that once it's in the base, it's there forever unless we start amending, which is not very likely. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cronk. Anyone else? Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
Wrap yes. up.
Excuse me, wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to talk to a couple of points that I heard said today. Firstly, I think it's important to note that we have approximately 50,000 of our youth ages 0 to 5, 50,000. Currently, 24,586 children receive the books. And I'm appreciative that a couple of my colleagues who I serve with in the freshman class have children who get these books. That's great. I also think it's really important that those with parents who don't know how to navigate have an opportunity to get them. It's important because it gives them the leg up that they need. There was comment about whether or not there is any data showing that this is going to make a difference in their higher literacy skills. Maybe not for my colleagues' children, because I'm sure they're very interactive and they read a lot. But for others, oh my goodness. And I think that we need to be cognizant of that. We do have a K through 12 school system that we spend a lot of money in, over $1 billion. And guess what? A lot of that money is spent to help bring our children up to speed. Because again, 70% of our kids are arriving 1 or 2 years behind their peers, behind what is considered ready to learn to read. So this really will make a mark, and it is an investment. There has been growth seen, and we will see more children receive these. I don't think it's going to go away because a lot of small communities, especially affluent ones, will throw in money to Dolly Parton Imagination Library. But the idea, if this is in the base, and again, we are putting in over $1 billion for K-12, and this is asking to put in $320,000 into 0 to 5-year-olds. So I hope that we just might consider it, as I think that it may bring us an ROI that will potentially help our K-12 system do much better. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Galvin. Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Colomb.
No.
Representative Cronk.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
By a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, Amendment number 35 has not been adopted. That brings us to Amendment number 36, offered by Representative Josephson.
I move Amendment 36.
Object.
Is there an objection?
Madam Chair, if I were under oath and I said that I was an expert in Minecraft, I'd be guilty of perjury. So I'm not going to tell you that I'm an expert in Minecraft, but I know enough to argue the merits of the amendment. The first thing I wanted to note is, oddly, some might say. This is an appropriation the governor, I'm told, wants, and I stand with the governor on this amendment. The Minecraft program is being used now and is designed to enhance computer science education. So while it sounds like gaming, it is about something constructive and real that is important to students. It would, as you see in the explanation, the request is to continue providing virtual educator courses for coding in Minecraft. Minecraft Science Credential Program with supporting curriculum delivered through Minecraft Ed. There are folks, including on this committee, that may say, well, why not go down to an Office Max and buy the software version if that's where it is? But through that version, you don't get assessments. You don't get certifications. And you need teachers, I'm told, to run the program. The appropriation isn't just for gaming, as I said, but it purchases licensing for third-party software that adds educational instruction material to the game and allows standards and oversight to achieve accreditation that is nationally recognized. We were already paying for this with COVID dollars, and now we would be paying for this with general fund dollars. And I thought, because it's compelling not to pick on anybody, but informative, that I would note that members of the committee have school districts, and I'll read through some of them, that would be impacted by the failure to adopt the amendment. And they include a school, I guess it's the Toke School, but also the Walter Northway School, the Sandpoint School, a school in the Bering Straits called District. I don't know if that's the district office.
Unicleet.
Paul Asiksik Senior School, Unalakleet School. Also in the Fairbanks area, the Arctic Light School, West Valley, Ann Ween, Ryan Middle School. In Ketchikan, Ketchikan High and Schoenbar Middle School. In the Cuspuck School District, where I was once employed, the Antioch Junior and Senior High School and the Auntie Mary Nikolai Elementary School. We don't have a Bethel delegate here, but Bethel Regional School, Alakanuk School in the LYSD, Marshall School, in the Matsuboro, Burchell High School, Colony High School, Colony Middle School, and the Denina Elementary School. Also in the Matsu Central School, Meadow Lakes Elementary, Sherrod Elementary, Valley Pathways Wasilla Middle School. Also the Nenana City Public School. We don't have a member from the Northwest Arctic Borough. Petersburg School, Mitkoff in the Petersburg School District, Mitkoff Middle School and High School. And finally in Wrangell, the Evergreen Elementary School. So these are, it's a lot of schools. Represented by members of the committee, I ask for your support for the amendment.
Representative Stout.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Okay, so this amendment fascinated me a lot, so I had to do a ton of research because I think kids learning code is great, although I just fundamentally refuse to believe that it costs $1.2 million to get kids the coding version of Minecraft. So I looked at the funding mechanism sent to me by the department, and basically what the order is, it is 500 units of coding in Minecraft curriculum at $2,418 a piece. Okay, that is the cost, the per unit cost, right? Each one of those units has associated amount of kids. The second part of the appropriation is Minecraft education additions for teachers. That is 84 cents for 80 units, right? Total of $67.20. And of course, the third is the free licensed version of the software, which didn't cost any money, and they ordered 1,200 units of that. So I think this amendment is a great exercise in how much things actually should cost. Because when I looked on the coding version of Minecraft on Steam, it was $40, right? If I average that per the amount of kids, based off this appropriation, it's $249 per student that can have this appropriation, right? So I certainly want the kids to be able to learn to code. I just refuse to believe it costs $249 per kid or $2,418 per unit. So that's why I'm going to be a no on the underlying amendment. I refuse to believe it's that much money. So,
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be speaking in support of Amendment Number 36. Representative Josephson mentioned the school district. That would be the Bering Strait School District, comprised of quite a few schools also. I've got a couple, so that's in my district also, Lower Yukon Schools. I do very much like the idea of helping our kids to become more tech savvy, and that would be for both urban and rural, which is exciting to me as we try to find more economic base and things that you can do remotely. And I think in terms of the cost, it's $1.2 million, but I think it sounds like it's spread over quite a few schools, so I'll be supporting Amendment Number 36. Thanks.
Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. So I just, as the subcommittee chair, and I think I was the one that put forward that amendment in subcommittee, just wanted to share some of the concerns the committee had around this. First of all, I shared the same concerns that Representative Stapp had. Several members were concerned of how expensive it was. There was a member concerned about starting something with COVID and continuing it after the COVID money was gone, but that was always as a warning, whatever COVID was being money spent on shouldn't be expected to continue. It also had a member concerned that we should be focusing on the Reads Act and having kids read before they code. And there was one member that they had a school district where they were able to do the Minecraft down in Southeast. It was way, way cheaper. And that the local community, the local district, could still pursue this, but there was a feeling that didn't want to have it come through deed and have the state have an exorbitant expense to it. So just thought I'd add those comments.
Thank you, Representative Klum. Representative Benjamin.
Yes, to the maker of the motion, could you again verify, I think you said that the governor supports this. I think the Commissioner of Education has come out in support of it. You can verify that if that's correct or not. But as a former teacher yourself, Representative Josephson, what strikes me is a lot of time it's difficult to keep kids in school, when they get to a certain age. Is this the kind of sort of program, beyond just simple coding? It's about, like you said, matching kids up with maybe an affinity to learn more about computer sciences in general. But I'd like to hear that perspective because there was a fair amount of rural schools that were listed as you gave your initial presentation.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. I wanted to make note that we've been joined by Representative Gray. Anyone else that would like to speak to Amendment Number 36? Representative
Cronk. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I haven't been on finance for a long time. It's my second year, but these are the woes of federal funding that we accept it, and then it just becomes part of our everyday life, and it just starts your budget just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. We always have those ties. We have to be, through COVID, now we're just going to throw this into our budget. Again, I have to just make sure everybody out there understands that, federal money's great, but if it just continues on and on and on, it becomes state money. And unfortunately, we don't get to print money in Alaska. We actually have to budget the money that we have. So, again, it's one of those darn if you do, darn if you don't kind of things. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. I want to say that I agree with Representative Cronk in that this is a very tough amendment. It's kind of one of those things that no matter where you go with this, it's not a real good answer with it. One is, I know the governor supports coding and teaching kids to code, feels like that's a good career path and makes that available. But I do also want to support our subcommittee chairs that took a hard look at this and did some research. So, for that reason, I will be a no vote, but again, I've mixed feelings about that, but I would like to support the subcommittee process because I stand by my subcommittee chair. So with that, do you maintain your objection, Representative Cronk?
No, I'm going to remove my objection.
Object.
No, we do have an objection. Madam?
I'd like to speak briefly in closing.
Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
Well, I'm getting interested in Minecraft. Who knew that could happen? the software that accompanies this would require teachers, the free software would require that teachers be certified in a relevant field. This pays for software through third parties. Yes, the commissioner, we believe, absolutely supports this. That should come as zero surprise. I see some things here in one document. It says that Alaska has the highest, quote, adoption rate. And I think that's a good thing in the Minecraft world. I think it means that someone is licensed or certified or the students have achieved their goals of any state, the highest adoption rate of any state using the program. You know, it strikes me that this may relate to why Governor Dunleavy talks about our having the finest under the Harvard Study charter schools. This may be consistent with that. It also says that regular live lessons, it can include engagement with homeschool students. Again, I can see why the governor supports this. And as to the price, this document that I have says that the product, the quantity is $500. The price is $24.18. So there's the $1 million when you throw in education licenses and education license per teacher and per student. So the price tag, it doesn't look like there's excess. It looks like that's the cost. I ask for your support of the amendment.
Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. All right. We are, I believe we were at the vote. Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
I maintain my objection.
You have maintained your objection. All right. Very good. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Representative Cronk.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Cologne.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Pass.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
5 yay, 6 nay.
All right, that brings us to amendment number 37, but I think this is a good time to stop for today. We have a floor at 1:30, so unless there's any further comments, we will adjourn. Just one moment here. Let me take a look at when we're going to adjourn to. Yeah, we are just wanted to make note that amendment number 36 was adopted by a vote of
no,
it wasn't.
I'm sorry. Amendment number 36 was 4, 5 yays and 6 nays, so amendment number 36 was not adopted. And that brings us to amendment number 37, but I think this is a good time to take a break, and Our next meeting is noticed for this afternoon at 1:30, but that's also the same time that the floor is noticed. So we will be delayed until after the floor. We'll make an announcement as soon as we know when we will be meeting this afternoon to continue taking up amendments. And so with no further business before the committee, we will be adjourned at 1:45 p.m. 12:45 p.m.